Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Science Media Center briefing on sea level rise. This briefing is based on an emerging issues paper on sea level rise put together by Jez Weston from the Royal Society in conjunction with a number of contributing scientists, including three who are on our panel today. Hopefully you've had a chance to look at the paper. It's available in the Science Media Center resource library on our website. If you have any trouble downloading that or getting hold of that, contact us here at the Science Media Center. So I'd just like to introduce our three panelists. The person who will be opening today is Professor Martin Manning, who is the director of the Climate Change Research Institute at Victoria University. Martin has worked as a theoretical nuclear physicist in Canada, the UK and New Zealand, but became progressively involved in atmospheric and climate change science from about 1980 onwards. He led research programs in NIWA covering atmospheric chemistry and the carbon cycle for 10 years and represented New Zealand on the IPCC. He spent 5 years in Colorado managing the recent IPCC assessment of the physical science of climate change prior to that organization being awarded a 2007 Nobel Peace Prize. He's now responsible, obviously, for the Climate Change Research Institute, which is hosted by Victoria University. Next up, we'll have Dr. Dan Swartz, who's a research fellow in ice sheets and sea level at the Antarctic Research Center, also at Victoria University. Dan studies the relationship between ice sheets, sea level, and the solid Earth in many environments and time periods. This includes the geological and instrumental evidence for changes in ice and sea level and the geophysical processes influencing both. And we'll round things out with Doug Ramsey, who's the manager responsible for the Pacific Rim at NIWA. Doug leads NIWA's work in the Pacific. He specializes in understanding and managing coastal hazard risks and the impacts of climate change on these risks in both New Zealand and the Pacific Islands. He led the revision of the Ministry for the Environment publication, Coastal Hazards and Climate Change, which we put a link to in the release. That's a guidance manual for local government in New Zealand. As usual, please hold your questions for the end when we'll open things up for Q&A, and I'll hand over now to Martin to start the presentation.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter. Let me click on my slide, and I'll go straight to the first one that shows anything. And this is a summary of quite a lot of data that's been collected over quite a long period of time, as you can see, 150 years and more, about sea level. And one of the issues is that the sort of wobbly blue curve you can see has an error bar around it, which comes down over time. That's the paler lines either side of it. But the other thing is it's got a lot of wobble simply because the data is only coming from coastal sites where we've got these sea level gauges, like in harbors and things like that. And more recently, you've got the red line right at the end, which is satellite data, which is scanning the height of the ocean over most of the ocean. We're probably missing out some of the very high latitudes around the North Pole or something like that, but this is covering things much better. And the first thing, I guess, to notice is that they match up fairly well. The second thing to notice is that the growth rate through the last century, from 1900 on, it was sort of slowly rising. It's fluctuating. Some of that's due to climate patterns, but it's sort of increasing steadily. And so that is starting to raise more and more issues about where it's going in the future. So if I go on to the next slide, this is showing in more detail the records from the satellites. And you can see some of the variation of things like El Nino years, when you're getting a change in the amount of heat that's transferred from the atmosphere into the ocean and then comes back again. And so you can get more warming in the ocean and then warming, pumping heat back into other parts of the planet. So we understand some of these fluctuations, but probably not everything yet. There's been a much better understanding, though, of what's causing sea level rise over the last 50 years in particular. As I go on, next one, you can see the satellites are also giving us a spatial pattern. The red curves, the red patches here are where the rate has been higher, the rate of sea level rise. the blue is where it's actually going down. And so over the last 20 years, there's been this sort of pattern, and we still don't know exactly whether that's going to continue longer term or not. Most studies into the future say it's not, and this is really just more a sort of decadal scale variation in the Earth's climate is causing this, but that doesn't mean that the ocean will lose all the heat that's absorbed or lose the sea level rise that's already occurred. But there are patterns, that's the bottom line here. And if I go on to the next one, we know that where this is coming from is fairly straightforward in some ways. It's coming from melting of glaciers and snowpacks on the main mountain ranges around the world. It's coming from melting ice sheets. And this figure here sort of shows the different timescales in which that can melt and end up in the ocean. And it's generally been thought that things like sea ice, you know, will go much faster than glaciers and ice caps. I would have to say that this was a figure that came out of our IPCC report in 2007, and already there might be some reasons for thinking those timescales in the bottom part of this figure are not quite the whole story, and there's probably reasons for thinking some things can happen faster. I'll come back to that later. If I move on to the next one, this is showing where global warming is going into the ocean. Warming from the greenhouse effect is largely being absorbed by the oceans, and you can see that in the bars at the top. The purplish ones are showing the amount of heat that's been absorbed over the period 1961 to 2003, and then the burgundy ones are the last 10 years of that period, 1993 to 2003. And this was compiling estimates from lots of different sources. So you can see a lot of the heat's going into the ocean, and then the next one is down are glaciers and ice caps are absorbing heat, Greenland ice sheet, Antarctic ice sheet, etc. And then you get other things also sort of causing, soaking up some heat. I'm going to come back in a minute to this point that the glaciers and ice caps are not, don't seem to be absorbing as much heat, but there's another issue here. So if I move on first, this is the best, most detailed explanation we've had so far of sea level rise since about 1960, and it came from a group in Tasmania run by CSIRO. And the upper panel here is showing different components. If I start from the bottom, the green one is the amount of sort of water that we think stored on continents around the world. And you can see that in the 1970s, there seems to be reduction in what will go into the ocean because of increased storage on land and as big dams were set up in various places. And this has then sort of gone back to more or less a neutral contribution. And if we come up to the pale orange one, this is the best estimates recently of the amount of thermal expansion in the deep ocean below about a kilometer down. And then you get this sort of fluctuating red curve, which is thermal expansion on the upper part of the ocean. And you can see there are cycles in this, which are driven by cycles and patterns in the whole climate system for the Earth as well. And then you get into the top two curves, really, over the long period, and you start to see now that the ice sheets and glaciers and ice caps are actually steadily increasing, and they're actually becoming dominant. And the top one is the mountain glaciers and ice caps, which, you know, not very thick and doesn't take very much heat to make them go. So a minute ago I said that, you know, if you look at the amount of heat going into the glaciers and ice sheets, it's small compared to the amount going into the ocean. But the bottom line is that they can melt much quicker and contribute to the sea level much quicker. They don't need nearly so much heat to contribute to the sea level rise. And then the bottom panel here is just showing the sort of the total of all those, which is the blue curve and uncertainty range around it, and the black line, the yellow lines are recent estimates of the actual sea level rise. So you can see they line up fairly well. And this was in 2008, and it was quite a big step forward, I would say, in understanding what was going on. The sea level rise involves these three components. Thermal expansion: if you warm the water, it'll go up. It expands in volume, and only has one way to go. 1 degree warming would cause a sea level rise of 0.5 meter, but that hasn't happened yet. Then we'd get the glaciers and mountain ice, mountain snowpacks, or the major ice sheets. And the major ice sheets have this huge potential. Greenland would be equivalent, if it went entirely, it would be equivalent to about a 7 meter sea level rise. Western Antarctica to another 3.5. And as I've already mentioned, it takes 50 times less heat to produce the same sea level rise by melting ice sheets as it would by just pumping the heat into the ocean. So moving on again, this is the range of estimates over quite a few years that have come from different science reports, starting with the U.S. Department of Energy report in 1985, which gave a big range. There were some even bigger ranges coming out around that time, but this was one that was put together by a large team of scientists. And then we came into the IPCC assessments, which were the red ones, and you can see they were sort of actually, if anything, starting to go down a bit. But by, in 2007, we definitely had to put a question mark at the top. And that was because we knew that the way these things were being calculated was not entirely consistent with what we were already seeing. So, questions. Since that report came out in 2008, 2009, even this year as well, there have been a flood of new estimates for sea level rise. And this is one that gets cited quite a lot by Stefan Ramstorff and one of his students, Vermeer. Ramstorff actually did his PhD at Victoria University in Wellington, so why we know him. And he's produced these estimates. And one of the key things, as you can see, they curve upwards. And the key point to understand is that the amount of sea level rise doesn't depend on the temperature. It's the rate at which sea level is rising depends on the temperature. And so if you get a linear rise in temperature, you will get this sort of quadratic curving up change in sea level rise. But if I move on to just doing a summary of estimates, and some of these are in the Royal Society summary as well, I'm including a few more here, and you can see that basically all the new estimates are starting to push a bit higher in the ranges that we covered in the last IPCC report. So you'll see more about that in the Royal Society document itself. And that leads us into then how do we deal with this from a risk management perspective. And in the Dutch Delta Committee is recommending a planning level going up to 1.2 meters, depending on the circumstances. And that's basically how much value are you putting in something on the coastline. 2009 said a plausible risk assessment, Australian Department of Climate Change, plausible risk assessment of 1.1 meters. California are recommending planning for 1.4 meters of sea level rise by the end of the century. And thing to keep in the back of our mind as well is that once this starts, it's going to go on for several centuries. That's all from me.
That's excellent. Thanks, Martin. I'll hand over now to Dan.
Thank you. You kept nicely to time, Martin. So I'm going to continue really with just a focus on the contribution from ice sheets, looking at new knowledge in that area. This is the graph that Martin showed, showing the increasing rate of contribution to sea level from the glaciers and ice caps and the polar ice sheets. And from the table on the left there, you can see that at present, the rates of sea level rise from those three sources are roughly the same. But of course, the interesting thing for estimates of sea level rise by the end of the century is what's going to happen to those. And the IPCC report in 2007 found that it could extrapolate the contribution as it is happening now, but it couldn't make any estimates of how the behavior of the melting of the ice sheets might change, and that limited their extrapolation, their estimate. So I'd like to show two things in the coming few slides. The first is the latest measurements showing how much the ice sheets are contributing to sea level over the last few years. And the second thing is the latest work in understanding the processes that might change the flow of the ice sheets over the coming centuries. So ice sheet mass balance is the term we use. The mass balance is just whether an ice sheet is gaining or losing mass, and that is exactly the same as what it's contributing to sea level. The mass that is lost by an ice sheet becomes sea level rise. And I'm going to go through three different ways of measuring that and showing that the results are rather similar. It's very difficult to measure the mass balance of a whole ice sheet just because they are so large and so remote, and it's really only been practical with any accuracy since we've been able to observe the entire continents with ice sheets on them by satellite. So the first method here is what I call mass budget, that is measuring estimating the amount of snow that is falling on a continent and taking away the amount of ice that's being lost by glaciers flowing into the sea. And the difference is whether it's contributing to sea level rise or fall. What we might expect here with climate change is that warmer air actually produces more snow, more accumulation on ice sheets, because warm air can carry more moisture. And that would lead the ice sheet to increase in size. On the other hand, a warmer ocean leads to more melting around the edges of the ice sheet and more glacier flow into the sea and ice sheet loss. And the study I've shown here, Renault 2008, shows that in large parts of East Antarctica, on the right-hand side of the screen, things are still more or less in balance. Only small red or blue dots shown there around the coast. Whereas in West Antarctica, those large red dots indicate that a lot of ice is being lost from those individual drainages as outlined in black. So that's the mass budget method. The next slide, here it is, shows another method, satellite altimetry. That is using a satellite that's flying over the ice sheets regularly to measure the height of the ice sheet surface, either with a laser, as in the map shown on the left there, or a radar, as shown on the right. And you do that many times, cover the whole continent, and if the ice sheet height is increasing, you might think that the size of the ice sheet is increasing too and not melting into the sea. It's a relatively straightforward measurement to make, but of course there has to be a correction for the movement of the land underneath the ice sheet, and that is in fact the largest uncertainty in these studies. Despite these uncertainties, the studies again produce quite similar results. You can see in both of these, although the colour scales are opposite, that the biggest changes, the biggest loss of ice is occurring in West Antarctica on the left-hand side of the continental map there. And that in the largest part of East Antarctica, the changes is a small but slightly positive mostly. And in the inset on the left, you can see that in Greenland, the pattern is quite similar, that the ice is being lost from the coastal areas. And the third method of measuring ice sheet mass balance is satellite gravity. This is a rather mind-boggling method whereby observing small changes in the orbits of satellites orbiting the Earth, you can actually calculate the changes in the distribution of mass underneath them as they fly. And it's a smoother, less lower resolution image because the satellites are 500 kilometers up. But you can see, again, it shows the same pattern with large ice loss from West Antarctica and small ice gain or not much change over most of East Antarctica. The satellite gravity method, as you see, doesn't have such good spatial resolution. It's a smoothed picture, but it does very well in time resolution. It can map the entire Earth's gravity every 10 days. And that leads to very useful studies of how the ice loss from the polar ice caps is changing through time. And the graphs on the left here show the mass of the Greenland ice sheet and the Antarctic ice sheet below. in gigatons of ice, shown on the left-hand scale, against an arbitrary zero for just the middle of the time series. And it shows that although we've got sufficient accuracy to see annual changes in the amount of ice through summer and winter, but a long-term trend over the last decade of ice sheet loss, and stronger than that even, that the rate of ice loss from both Antarctica and Greenland is actually increasing. That line is getting deeper downwards through time, at least over the period we've been able to observe them so far. And on the right-hand side there, that's a map of Greenland, shown in two different time slices, up to 2007 and up to 2009, showing that in recent years, the loss of ice from Greenland is happening from a large area. That purple patch extending up the west coast of Greenland shows that the regions of Greenland that are losing ice are increasing. It's the type of result you can get from these satellite gravity measurements. Here we go, putting a lot of different studies from all of those methods together. The colors of the different boxes there indicate red gravity measurements, blue altimetry, and green mass budget over the last 30 years, showing how, although it's a difficult thing to measure and each individual study has quite large uncertainty, there is considerable overlap. And more to the point, the combination of all of these studies indicates an increasing rate of ice loss from both Greenland and Antarctica. That the rising line, the rising trend in both the upper and lower plot aren't the increase in sea level, they are the increasing rate of contribution to sea level. So they're melting faster and faster. And in fact, the rate has doubled over the last 5 years, according to these measurements. It's clearly a very important thing to monitoring, and although satellites are one of the most expensive ways of doing science, there are new satellites being launched and designed for the future to keep track of this. And the other point I make on that slide is just as a matter of scale that sea level rise of 1 millimeter per year, which both Greenland and Antarctica are approaching, is equivalent to more than a cubic kilometer of ice per day being lost from each of those ice sheets. All right, I'd like to move on now to the development in understanding of the processes that might affect how the ice sheets change in the coming century. It's difficult to observe the mass of an ice sheet from a satellite, but to understand the processes, I think, is even harder, and you can't understate the efforts going into field research. To work out what's going on there, people are still spending months every summer in very remote areas, camped on top of moving glaciers and studying what's going on with them. And also, in the pictures on this slide, studying from the ocean what is happening around the edges of the ice sheet. A study that came out this year, Jenkins and others in Nature, is really quite remarkable in terms of innovation and the information it's produced. They had a autonomous robotic submarine that they could let go for at least a day at a time to travel tens of kilometers in the ocean underneath floating ice to study how the oceans and the ice are interacting with each other. The picture on the top right there, the grey is ice moving from Antarctica on the right-hand side towards the sea on the left-hand side. The black line at the bottom is the bedrock, and the space in between, between the ice and the rock, is the water where this robot was swimming, profiling up and down on its own and measuring the temperature. And what they were able to observe is plumes of warm water coming in and melting away the edge of the ice sheet. That's summarized in the next slide.